greet you this morning in the name of our shepherd. Thank you, Chad, for those thoughts. I'm thankful that we have a shepherd that guides us through the wilderness, but he lets us cut the shrubs and the trees and the bushes. But he's guiding us and showing us a way. I do feel fine this morning, even though my voice, like Brother Chad's, is not the best. I would invite your prayers that it holds. Thank you for your prayers, not only on Sunday morning, but throughout the week. Thank you for your prayers on behalf of our family. God is a good God, and we want to continue to praise and worship him this morning. I suppose you're all looking forward to Thursday, and maybe you're counting your blessings or thinking of things to be thankful for. I'm not sure what you expect. A message before Thanksgiving is often one surrounding Thanksgiving. Had to think of what ingredients make a good Thanksgiving, and I'm thinking of things far beyond a turkey and how well it's done and whether it's out of the freezer yet and all those kind of questions. I'd like to start by quoting a verse from Psalm 116 that was already quoted this morning. Brother Shannon read that. He did not make a comment on it that I can remember. Psalm 116, verse 17 says, "I will offer to thee the sacrifice of thanksgiving and will call upon the name of the Lord." What ingredients make a good Thanksgiving? It's not a turkey done just right. It's not the filling that's done just right. I believe the preparation for a good Thanksgiving starts now, today. And maybe it has started last week or the week before or last month. The title of the message is The Sacrifice of Thanksgiving. I wonder if we know what sacrifice means. Psalmist said, "I will offer to thee a sacrifice of thanksgiving." What was he saying? Did you offer a sacrifice this morning? Maybe that's one of the things that passed away, I suppose, with the Old Testament. Is there an altar here? And this is not an altar, by the way. This is just something to rest my Bible on. Does God expect it from his people? Well, sacrifices were done ever since God created man. You don't have to turn to the book of Genesis chapter 4, but you may. Hebrews 11:4, talking about Abel. We'd like to talk about two Bible characters this morning. Hebrews 11:4 says, "By faith Abel offered unto God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, by which he obtained witness that he was righteous, God testifying of his gifts, and by it he, being dead, yet speaketh." Abel offered an excellent sacrifice. Why was Abel's sacrifice excellent? This question has been debated, and I don't know if I have the exact answer to that. It says that he brought of the firstlings of his flock and of the fat thereof, and the Lord had respect unto it. Cain brought of the fruit of the ground, and the Lord did not respect it. What was the problem? See, the problem wasn't the sacrifice. Well, maybe it was. I don't know. Maybe the problem was the sacrifice. Maybe God had told them, or God, they knew right from the start that God, when you do a sacrifice, you don't bring this type of vegetable. I don't think that's the case. It wasn't the sacrifice. It was the heart condition of the offerer that made the difference. Cain was offering an offering to God, but where was his heart? He was immediately angry. The Lord said unto Cain, why art you wroth? Why is your countenance fallen? Why is your face contorted? I don't know what all that means. I should have looked that up. I assume that's what it means. If thou doest well, shalt thou not be accepted? In other words, the implication there is that he wasn't doing well. Why wasn't he doing well? There was a problem in here. There's a problem in here. The attitude of our heart speaks louder than the visible sacrifice or the outward show of thanksgiving. The condition of our heart speaks louder and is more real than the things that we spew out of our mouth that we're thankful for. As I thought about offerings, sacrifices, I thought about Leviticus, and I was thinking that there was something called a thank offering. Did a little study on it, and I came to the thank offering. It's mentioned or implied a couple places, but Leviticus chapter 3 and chapter 7 talk about it. It was a peace offering. I'd like to talk about peace offerings a little bit. Peace offering was an offering of thanks. That's what it means, a sacrifice and thanks. The Old Testament, the children of Israel, they started their day with a burnt offering. They were supposed to bring an animal. I think a burnt offering was for the whole camp. They were supposed to bring like a big animal, like a bull or a heifer or something. It was probably one or the other. I don't recall. Offer it up in the presence of the people. There was also meat offering, which meat means grain, a grain offering. This was a voluntary act. It was not something that you had to do every day, but it was a voluntary offering that you would offer to the Lord. And it was as these offerings were, so you would actually get an animal or get the food sometimes and just burn it. And the smoke would go up, and in relation to sacrifices, God said it's a sweet savor. God was looking for that burning of this offering that man was giving and putting it on the altar, lighting it, and the smoke goes up. And God looked at that and he smelled it and he said, that's good, that's good. The peace offering, we already talked about that a little bit, an offering of thanksgiving. And then there was a sin and a trespass offering, which were only done after there was a sin. If you sinned, if you got angry at your neighbor and cussed, said some bad words, just using a rough example, but you would have to go to your flock of animals and pick out one that was perfect, your best one. Bring it to the priest the next day, the next morning, or maybe that very day, and bring it to the priest and say, I'm sorry, I sinned against my neighbor and said some bad things. And it was a sin. It was a sin between, broke a relationship. And when man sins, it not only breaks a relationship with his neighbor, it breaks a relationship with God. So they had to take this perfect animal, this animal that did nothing wrong, and they had to, and the man would put his hands on it, as I remember, signifying that the sins were now past, that he was putting his responsibility on this animal, and the animal would be killed. Right there, public. There was a death involved. The death of the animal. The blood would flow, and they would offer it as a burnt sacrifice, as a sin or trespass offering. Now back to the peace offering. The peace offering was symbolic of the sincere and conscientious mind recognizing that God is eternal and high, and we're so lowly, and we're sinners. We make mistakes. But we're so thankful that if we take care of our sin, if we offer our trespass offerings and so on, that we can have that reconciliation, that link back to God can be fixed. And so as a result of that, we have peace. And so as a result of that peace, you want to offer an offering of peace, an offering of thanksgiving. And that's what the peace offering was. This is what's behind the verse in Ephesians 2, verse 14. He is our peace, who has made both one and broken down the middle wall, having abolished in his flesh the enmity. See, that's talking about the Jew and the Gentile, but it also means the peace or the continued relationship that can happen because man has found a way to take care of his sin because of offering the shed blood. The offerer comes into a state of peace and communion with God. Turn to Psalm 107. Actually, just hold that. I want to close with that instead of looking at that now. I'm going to sum it up by saying this. The peace or thanksgiving offering was a voluntary offering of praise to God for his mercy and grace, bringing about and restoring a fellowship and relationship between the offerer and his God. Are you offering sacrifices of thanksgiving? Because Jesus has come. Jesus shed his blood. We don't need to go and find a lamb and pull an animal out of our flock and kill it. That blood has been shed. Jesus shed his blood. Does my life involve living my life in such a way that peace and thanksgiving is flowing out of my life to God because of his gift? We'll have more to say on that. We'd like to look at a Bible example now of someone who offered a prayer of thanksgiving, a sacrifice and thanksgiving. He offered a prayer because he was unable to offer it literally. This is an Old Testament example. I could ask it as a trivia question and wait for your responses, but you probably will not be able to guess who I'm talking about. Someone who needed to offer a prayer of thanks, of sacrifice, because in the situation he was, there's no way he could offer it in a way that the Old Testament saints were to do that. You can turn to the book of Jonah. Jonah was a prophet. He is very famous in the scriptures because of numerous things. The children like this story. Adults like this story. Jonah was, God called him to go and preach to a city of Nineveh, and he said no. If God says something, do we say no? Children? If God says something, do we say no? No. This man said no. And he went the other way. He went the opposite way. Well, we know what happened. There was a great wind. He got on this ship These were not godly men. These were idol-worshiping men who were driving the ship. And the sea got rough, and they started crying out to their God. But where was Jonah? He was asleep. He was numbing himself to his disobedience, trying to push down his guilty conscience. He was asleep. But they were crying out to their gods. Well, I'm not going to give every detail here. But they finally got him awake, and they said, "What's going on?" He said, "Well, I know what's going on." He said, "Throw me overboard." And so they did. And the sea ceased to raging in verse 15, chapter 1. Then the men feared the Lord exceedingly and offered a sacrifice unto the Lord and made vows. Look, it's very interesting to me that these men offered a sacrifice. I don't understand that. Apparently they were used to sacrificing to their idols, but they realized that here was a God that was bigger than their God, and they offered sacrifice to him, I guess, so they were on the ship. Now the Lord had prepared a great fish to swallow up Jonah. And Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights. Then Jonah prayed unto the Lord his God out of the fish's belly. And he said, I cried by reason of mine affliction unto the Lord, and he heard me. Out of the belly of hell cried I, and thou heardst my voice, for thou hadst cast me into the deep, into the midst of the sea, and the floods compassed me about, and all the billows and the waves passed over me. Then I said, I'm cast out of thy sight, yet I will look again toward thy holy temple. The waters compassed me about, even to the soul. The depth closed me round about. The weeds were wrapped around my head. I went down to the bottoms of the mountains. The earth with her bars was about me forever. Yet thou hast brought up my life from corruption. O Lord, my God, when my soul fainted within me, I remembered the Lord. And my prayer came in unto thee, into thine holy temple. They that observe lying vanities forsake their own mercy. But I will sacrifice unto thee with the voice of thanksgiving. I will pay that I have vowed. Salvation is of the Lord. And the Lord spake unto the fish, and it vomited out Jonah upon the dry land. That's quite a story. And the story goes on. It would be interesting to just continue to look at the life of Jonah, and I'll let you do that maybe this afternoon. You can read and study more about this man. Why did Jonah run away? Didn't he know that disobeying God would bring condemnation? Will bring consequences? God doesn't just say, okay, that's fine, I'll try someone else. What is going on in Jonah's life? Maybe he was, this command from God came, and maybe he felt self-conscious about going to preach at Nineveh, because all his other friend prophets like Joel and Amos, they preach to their own people. Why, God, are you asking me to go preach to this enemy nation over here? They're not the people that need to hear the word of the Lord, to hear your word. It's my people that I need to go. Why are you asking me to do this? Maybe it just didn't make sense to go to preach to this nation. To him, it was a ridiculous waste of time and energy. Maybe he just wanted his own way. I don't know, but verse 8 in chapter 2 gives us a little clue in what was going on in Jonah's life. There's not much else in this prayer of Jonah. There's a lot in this prayer of Jonah. A lot about where he found himself, how he felt. There's not a lot of clues about what was going on except for verse 8. where he just tucked into this prayer, it says this: they that observe lying vanities forsake their own mercy. Jonah forgot the mercies of the Lord. Jonah forgot who he was. He forgot who he was delivered from. He forgot that he was a part of God's people. He forgot his own mercy. He forgot the abundant mercy of God that was shed abroad in his life, that God preserved him. I don't know what all Jonah had gone through up to this point. We had a little time of reminiscing last night about times in our life when God delivered us. An after supper conversation, if you know what that is. I'm sure Jonah had some of those where his mind went back and he thought about how good God was. And here, this good God who preserved him in the past came with this request to go preach to Nineveh. He said, no. Why? What? He forgot his own mercy. He forgot God's mercy. And is he implying that he went to Tarshish because he wanted to observe lying vanities? Tarshish was there's not much known about Tarshish, even where it was. A lot of people think it was in Spain, all the way across the Mediterranean Ocean Sea, toward the Atlantic Ocean. It was far away, opposite direction. It was a city of wealth and exotic goods. Strange, exotic things like apes and peacocks, according to 1 Kings 10, verse 22. Is that what was on his mind? Is that what he was coping with to ease the pain of not doing something that God wanted him to do? His mind went to something to fulfill his lusts. Observe means to protect, attend to, or take heed to. Observe, it just focusing. Lying means evil, literally or morally. Figuratively means idolatry, uselessness. He is focusing on something that was evil and useless. Vanities means just that, emptiness, something transitory and unsatisfactory. He was focusing on things that didn't matter, and they were actually evil. Could it be that his obsession with lying vanities in a wealthy and exotic city led him to forsake the mercies of God by directly disobeying the word of the Lord, and it took him away? But God had other plans. God brought the fish into the picture, and the horrible experience of living inside a fish. And this, according to history, this has happened a time or two. It was a case back in the 1800s where a man was overboard and got swallowed by a whale. A sperm whale, and they actually harpooned the whale later, and they were pulled the thing on the deck, and they were cutting it open, and they got to the stomach, and they cut the stomach open and out, and here was this man, and he was still alive. Some doubt the story, but I don't doubt it. God can do that. I think he was blind. Some people remember or thought that he was blind for the rest of his life, and others said he got back to work in a couple weeks. Incredible story. That he was well enough to do that. But out of his prayer here, verse 9, but I will sacrifice unto thee with the voice of thanksgiving. That sacrifice came during his journey during his experience in this, the belly of this fish. When Jonah came to grips with himself in the belly of the fish and remembered the mercies of the Lord, and he was ready to offer the sacrifices of thanksgiving. The point in all this, the point that we learned from Jonah, is that lying vanities, and we don't have to go to Tarshish today to get to behold lying vanities. We don't have to do that. Lying vanities stifle the sacrifices of thankfulness in our hearts and quench our memories of the mercies of God and leads us into disobedience, into a path away from God. Jonah was finding his way back, and what did he want to do? He wanted to sacrifice. Sacrifice. Give to the Lord, return to the Lord that which he had vowed. I will pay that I have vowed. Appreciated Shannon's thoughts on that this morning. Salvation is of the Lord. It took the belly of the fish 3 days in order for Jonah to change his focus. Lying vanities will keep you from experiencing a blessed thanksgiving. I really believe that's so. The last point of the message is Romans chapter 12, verse 1. Where do we go from here? What about us? Where is God? What does God want from us? What does God want from me? I ask if you offered an offering this morning. I hope you did. Romans 12, verse 1. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that ye present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. Paul concludes the chapters of Christian doctrine. Romans 1 through 11 is filled with Christian doctrine, and there's many solid truths that we find there. But as a conclusion to all this, in the end of chapter 11, verse 33, he says, "Oh, the depth of the riches, both of the wisdom and knowledge of God! How unsearchable are his judgments and his ways past finding out! For who hath known the mind of the Lord? Or who hath been his counselor? Or who hath first given to him, and it shall be recompensed unto him again? For of him and through him," talking about Jesus Christ, "and to him are all things, to him be glory forever. Amen. Now, I beseech you, brethren, because of all this, because of how great God is, and Jesus and what he has done for us, I beseech you, brethren and sisters, this morning, by the mercies of God, don't forget what God has done. Never forget what he has done. Never forget what he has delivered you from. The children of Israel, as they traveled out, they forgot. They forgot the bondage, but remembered the leeks and the garlics. They remembered all the good things, but they forgot the bondage. Let's never forget the bondage that we were in before we found Christ. Never forget that. Yes, we move on with Christian grace, and we move on in thanksgiving that we're no longer sinners like we were and all that. But never forget the bondage, because it helps you to remember the mercies of God, the mercies of God were poured out upon us when we were in that bondage. And there was a hand of grace saying, Lord, and saying to us that you can, God saying that I'll help you out of that bondage. By the mercies of God. We don't deserve it. We can't earn it. Christ's sinless blood sacrifice has been offered to us. If we receive it, we own it by the mercies of God, a tremendous gift. Now, what are you going to do with that gift? See, you've been given it. What are you going to do with it? And it says we're to present it we are to present our bodies a living sacrifice. So this is a little different than the Old Testament. Actually, it's a lot different from the Old Testament. We were supposed to go out to the flock, go out to the barn, and bring in this perfect little lamb and offer it. Here, Apostle Paul is saying, God is calling us to present our whole bodies. We're supposed to put ourselves on the altar. Not just offering our time and the talents, but it's offering ourselves. Remember back when we were talking about the offerings in the Old Testament, how they offered an animal. This animal would not walk again back to the barn. After this sacrifice, this animal was dead. It died. The same goes with us. When we put ourselves and we, because of the mercies of God, he's brought us out of bondage. He's brought us out of wandering in the wilderness. But now we are to present our bodies. We're to place ourselves on this altar and we're to let ourselves burn. Yes, that old self, the old carnal, my old carnal will and my old carnal desires need to burn. Need to burn so that we can be holy and acceptable unto God, which is our reasonable service. An unholy Christian cannot present himself as a living sacrifice to God because self is still very much alive, enjoying the pleasures of sin. For a person to approach God and live, we need to come on his terms. We come as sinners seeking grace and pardon. We come through the merits of Jesus Christ. And we're made righteous by his blood and by our choice to offer, accept the offer of salvation. And when we accept the offer of salvation, we reject the offer of Satan to continue living for self. And in so doing, we become acceptable to God when we accept him and say no to Satan. Our offering becomes acceptable to God. It's a sweet smelling savor. Seems like too many times I turn to Romans 12, and as good Anabaptists and Mennonites, we focus in on verse 2, be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed. Well, that process starts in verse 1. See? Verse 1, as we offer ourselves, as we are completely willing to give up ourselves to God in his service, then the conformation, the nonconformity in verse 2, and the transformation of our minds has a good platform to grow from. Dead to the world would I be, O Father. Dead unto sin, alive unto thee. Crucify all the earthly within me. Emptied of sin and self may I be. Does God require sacrifices today? Yes, he does. He's asking you to sacrifice yourself on the cross of surrender. The cross is submission to his will. Not like Jonah, who went his own way and had to pray a prayer of sacrifice in a belly of a fish. He requires a sacrifice of service, a sacrifice of a cup of cold water. Read the rest of Romans. That's a whole other sermon in itself, how to practical ways of sacrificing, living a life of sacrifice for God. Can we agree this morning that a Thanksgiving season where everything earthly is crucified, where sin and self is emptied out of my life, that those are the ingredients that will make a wonderful, memorable Thanksgiving? Psalm 107, 21 and 22. Oh, that men would praise the Lord for his goodness and for his wonderful works to the children of men, and let them sacrifice the sacrifices of thanksgiving and declare his works with rejoicing. Have a blessed Thanksgiving.